Blog Talk Radio.
And hello there. You're now listening live to the Ben Solomon Blog Talk Radio. Reason why I did this, decided to go with, I think, this title, which is the Ben Solomon Show, as opposed to saying the actual topic, as opposed to recent news, because I want to be open to other topics too. But there was a recent piece of news that inspired me to do this show. Last episode, I discussed the SJW Social Justice Warrior Show, 13 Reasons Why, and I expressed my thoughts on that show. And I expressed my criticism of that show. Basically, to recap, that show is about Hannah Baker, a teenage girl who committed suicide, who left 13 tapes, which talks about each person that caused her to commit suicide, and eventually committed suicide. The end of the show shows you her, to be graphic, it shows you her slitting her wrists and dying. It was a pretty graphic show, and I still think that show should be rated R. I do not think that show should be marketed in any way to young teens. That's, you know, my first opinion, but also, basically, another criticism of the show, and I'm going to get to this because there's also, like, because recently the news and the story is what really got me to inspire me to do this. Recently in the news, there was a man who committed suicide and leaves behind tapes. That's why he did so. You know, in a similar fashion to Hannah Baker from infamous SJW show, 13 Reasons Why. But basically, again, that show basically does not, I mean, that show was marketed for young people and stuff like that. It trivializes suicide. It does not basically give any reason why not to do so. Instead, basically, the show portrays it where Hannah Baker committing suicide led her to basically get justice served on her behalf. Because her crush, Clay, was listening to the tapes. He ended up avenging her by going after the people who bullied her, eventually leading also to the head of the football team getting in trouble for the rapes that he carried out. To recap, but okay, I'm going to read you this article from Desert News. This man commits suicide and leaves behind tapes. Let me research the reasons why. Bear in mind, this show is going to be a more serious show, so I guess I talk about serious topics, but I'm going to be on the more serious end. And because I'm going to read this article, I usually don't talk about these issues, but here I go. So, anyway, so I guess I'm having a bit of trouble putting a link in the chat room, unfortunately. So, let's see. Okay. Hello, guest 845. I'm having trouble putting a link in the chat room, so you can go to the title of the article. Is on Desert, man commits suicide and leaves behind tapes similar to 13 Reasons Why. And this article is by Herb Scribner, and it's a recent article published on June 9th, 2017. In other words, it was published yesterday. And so it's a very recent news. Very recent news. So the article reports, quote, a 23-year-old man from Peru took his own life this week and left behind recordings of what allegedly inspired him to do so, according to Yahoo News. The death was allegedly inspired by the hit Netflix series 13 Reasons Why. The Peruvian news outlet Diario Clarín reported that Franco Alonso Lazo Medrano jumped from a balcony of his apartment saying he can't stand a heartbreak. Medrano survived the fall but later died in the hospital, Yahoo reported. Police told Diario Clarín they found two suicide notes at his home, one for a woman named Claudio and the other containing a list of names of people who he had recorded tapes for. He said in his note that these people caused him to kill himself. The notes didn't specifically reference 13 Reasons Why, but leaving behind tapes for people after suicide is the main plot point of the Netflix hit, according to Yahoo News. Leading Utah suicide expert Greg Hundahl said this event was very frustrating. I have had numerous calls from ecclesiastical leaders, school administrators, and parents sharing their frustrations, he told the Deseret News. It dumbfounds me that we as a society would allow this to continue. Hudnall also said he's spoken with a number of professionals over the last few weeks. Some, he said, told him the show was helpful in helping others understand the challenges our young people are facing, but Hudnall said he hasn't watched the show and he encouraged others not to watch it either. Many Reasons Why has received heavy praise and criticism, according to Associated Press. Suicide prevention specialists across the country expressed worry that teens might watch this series without fully observing the issues or asking questions. Despite these reasons, 13 Reasons Why will have a second season, according to CNN executive producer Selena Gomez first announced it on Instagram. A few details are known about the second season with Dylan Minnette, who plays the main character Clay Jensen, offered one break to the Hollywood Reporter. It's going to be just as important and dark, he said. It's for these reasons that Hudnall said in May that he shouldn't watch the show without parents. He also said that young people shouldn't watch the show at all since it sensationalizes suicide. I'm all about educating people on prevention, he said in a point of view. I'm all about suicide prevention. What I'm not about is sensationalizing suicide. Hudnall said the show doesn't accurately portray suicide, which spreads misinformation about it and sensationalizes the subject. For example, Hudnall said the show doesn't offer any positive role models. Definitely agree with that last point. This is me talking. Definitely agree with that last point because, you know, in the show, Hannah Baker, I mean, yeah, she was bullied, and yeah, she was even raped, but she also, brought much of the bullying onto herself. She lashed out at people and did not take responsibility for her actions. I mean, specifically, as I said in the last episode of this, what really, I think, gets under my skin the most is specifically, you know, when, you know, like, her committing suicide, like, over Clay Jensen, not expressing his love for her, I think was pretty petty because, I mean, what especially gets under my skin is after the sex scene between Clay Jensen and Hannah Baker, Hannah told him to stop and he stopped, but what got under my skin was Hannah Baker was yelling at him repeatedly to leave the room. And he left the room. And then him leaving the room was... And then Clay Jensen, and the show portrayed it where Clay Jensen, by leaving the room, was among those responsible for Hannah killing herself. Specifically in the... Clay Jensen asked his friend, judging from those tapes after you listened to them, did I kill Hannah Baker? And he said, yes. Yes. Clay Jensen killed Hannah Baker, supposedly, because he did what she yelled at him to do after repeatedly yelling at him to leave. And so, you know, the show doesn't offer positive role models. I find myself agreeing with that. It doesn't. Hudnall said this. It also doesn't do much to educate people on suicide, he says, since Hannah's struggle plays out over the course of 6 months and not the more likely 24 to 48 hour window. Young people don't plan as often about suicide as it portrays it, he said. A lot of times, in a lot of those situations, we see the suicide coming in within the 24 to 48 hour window. Hudnall also said 13 Reasons Why can lead to more deaths, since popularizing the issue creates contagion. I don't know what this word. Let me just look it up. So, Let me just look up this word. But some reason my computer contagion or whatever, however you pronounce it. Okay, dick. I'm just gonna look up this word, but then I'm just gonna go on. Contagion, the transmission of disease by direct or indirect contact. Disease progressing. Okay, so the transmission of disease, a medium by which contagion harmful, undesirable contact or influence. Okay, so now I get the meaning of the word now, but the biggest problem, I think, I mean, it's not merely this. I mean, again, it's not merely. I mean, as I said in the last episode, I'm all for having violent scenes in show, entertaining shows when they're necessary. I'm not one of those guys who's like, oh my God, it's too violent. Take it out, take it out, take it out. No, I think, like shows like Game of Thrones, for instance, like have violent scenes when, and it's necessary for them to have those violent scenes. But at the same time, when at the same time, it depends also like how the scene's portrayed. In the show, Hannah's suicide is portrayed where she gets justice on her behalf after committing the suicide, basically. And I think that's problematic because however bad someone's life gets, suicide is never the answer, never. So I gotta agree with that statement as well. Pudnall said parents of teens who want to watch the series should watch it with their children. They should research resources that can help their kids throughout the issue. We still want to provide that help. He said he added, I think in the long run the show can cause more trauma and pain for children. Well, again, I'm just gonna. I don't want to spend too much time on this. I'm gonna try to go on other issues after this because this is. I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I do want to say. But I'm gonna give my view on this. I'm gonna give my view on this. The biggest problem is because I watched the show and. And the biggest problem with 13 Reasons Why is, other than I think, in my view, being basically an SJW show, it's about this girl, Hannah Baker, who doesn't take responsibility for her actions. And not saying she wasn't bullied, but she also lashed out at people and stuff like that. She did not take responsibility for her actions. Basically, it portrays it where she made these tapes, committed suicide. Basically, saying, look at what you people did. Clay Jensen among them, because Clay killed her by leaving the room because Clay failed to read her mind. She was yelling at him to leave. He left, and Clay failed to read her mind, and therefore, because of that, he killed her. Now, the biggest issue is, this show does not give a compelling reason as to not commit suicide, which it should have done. The show instead basically portrayed it where, like, you see Hannah Baker committing suicide. It's a way of saying, look at what you people, look at those horrible people. Look at, it's her, like, her leaving these tapes, committing suicide, saying, look at what you people made me do, pretty much. And what's specifically sickening is when Clay had this, like, image where he was with Hannah Baker in the bedroom and then he explained how he loved her and she said, well, why didn't you tell me that when I was alive? And it's, the whole concept there is ridiculous, I think, in my view. But instead, the show portrays it where Hannah's suicide led to justice being served on her behalf. And if you're going to get that message where, like, specifically if you, let's say, feel the same way, and you see this show, and you see justice being served on Hannah's behalf, and eventually the guy who raped her is going to be in big trouble and face jail time, as he should, then, you know, it doesn't provide a compelling reason as to commit suicide. And that's why suicide prevention specialists are rightly worried about that. It's just, that's all I have to say. I expressed my view in the last episode. I just decided to talk more about it because from seeing this article. And so, but I want to sort of move on and find something else to talk about. Also earlier today, I was still earlier today, it's almost like day and night, earlier today while it was still Shabbat, I saw the newspaper, the New York Times, and this article was, you know, sort of glaring at me. Well, not literally glaring, of course, but I saw this article. I read parts of it. It's about this school district as well, where basically it was about the school district where basically supposedly the people for like the whites and the blacks and Hispanics go to different schools, like they choose different schools for their kids, and then so then they want to have the government, like, and the article styled like school choice leading to leading to self-imposed segregation or something like that. The implication being that, you know, school choice is another way for conservatives to want to impose segregation, which is left-wing propaganda. And what they're proposing is inherently, you know, more government control, like the government basically like telling people what schools they can or can't go to in a bid to basically have more diversity, of skin color and stuff like that. I was going to comment on that and say that I think that's ridiculous and absurd. I mean, I think school choice is a good thing, and have the government just, you know, but it's knows that this is absurd. We see, like, too much of this, you know, like, I mean, the left has sort of an OCD obsession to race, specifically when it comes to the idea of white privilege is nothing more, I think, than masochism and OCD for white people. It involves, like, I mean, the idea of microaggressions and the sexist mentality set up where white males are the scum of the earth. They're inherently racist because they have, just by being born, they're born with this privilege that they have at the expense of others. And every day they have to be reminded of this privilege, and basically in atone for having a penis and having white skin. Unless, of course, they choose to identify as women, then, you know, then they can, that's the only way to enter the victim club. You know, identify as women and maybe get some, maybe get a good tan. I mean, if you're a white male and you want to be seen as a victim in the eyes of the left, here's what you do. Get a tan and identify as a woman. And then you'll be, and then you can be like a tan transgender woman. I mean, that's the bottom line. That's the bottom line. To be seen as a victim in this SJW religion and get brownie points for it, white males, get a tan, identify as a woman, identify as a female. And nobody, and once you identify as a female, nobody can question your gender identity or else they're transphobic and bigots, according to the SJW religion, according to the far leftist SJW religion. Anyway, I want to try to find some recent news as well, because I know there was one recent news about Comey's testimony, although the interesting thing also about Trump and Russia is, as I was saying, I didn't fully watch Comey's testimony, but I did see little bits of it. I mean, I didn't plan to watch it, but I didn't focus on other things as well. But the Yeah, but it's interesting how one of the things Comey said was that, and bear in mind also, just James Comey, the left had no love. Hello, why hello? Welcome to the chat room. Welcome to my show. Hello, why hello? But I want to talk about a little bit about, I mean, James Comey. James Comey, the FBI. Now, bear in mind, the far left had no love for him. They had no love for him. After Hillary Clinton lost the election, she blamed James Comey for her loss. She blamed James Comey's investigation over her emails as for her loss of the election. She blamed James Comey, and she also blamed Russia. Although the left is right now clinging more to Russia, they want. I mean, it's so funny how these leftists were making fun of Trump, saying, "Oh, he's not going to accept the results of the election because Trump said he had to see for himself." These leftists were saying, "Oh, he's not going to accept the results of the election." And then after he won the election, it's leftists who were not accepting the results of the election. There were people rioting. I mean, the SJW snowflakes rioting. Even during his inauguration address, there were riots. There were people breaking the windows of Bank of America and Starbucks, both of which supported Hillary Clinton. And by the way, Starbucks also supports Planned Parenthood, the largest infamous abortion chain. And that's the irony of the whole thing. But I mean, the funny thing is the transition from Obama to Trump has been the roughest transition ever. And it's the only one where there were actually riots. Now, what's funny is during, you know, during these, I mean, right now, these leftists, I mean, Jill Stein, during the transition, Jill Stein, that whiny baby, wants to have a recount. They were making fun of Trump not accepting the results of the election. It was Jill Stein who did not accept the results of the election. She was saying, "Oh, we gotta have a recount." And now these leftists are saying, you know, Russia, 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 Russia. Look, there's zero evidence of Trump being Putin's agent. There's zero evidence that Trump did anything illegal. And James Comey himself even said he was not investigating Donald Trump. When it came to a specific New York Times story, this is what I did to listen to. When it came to a specific New York Times story of James, you know, that a specific New York Times story alleging that Trump's campaign was linked with Russia or something along those lines, James Comey said that was inaccurate. James Comey said that was inaccurate. The left right now suddenly cares about Putin being a killer. And look, and I'm not going to defend Putin. He is a bad guy. But during the 2012 election, Barack Obama, the disgraceful president, who Barack Obama, the far leftist who I think hates America, he saw America as a racist country, and he believed he would radically transform America, and he did a lot of damage during those 8 years. Those 8 years was pretty much the dark ages of American history, of the American presidency. It's the dark ages of the American presidency. Now, back in 2000 and or back during the 2012 election, Barack Obama told the Russian president to basically that he'll be more flexible about selling, about giving our missile defense system in Poland over to Russia after he got reelected. Our being Americans. Promise. Now, Obama has been, until the end of his presidency, Obama has been appeasing Russia. Putin was able to send troops into Syria to shield the butcher, Bashar Assad. And when Obama was asked about 60 Minutes about Putin showing his power, Obama was in complete denial and acted like the interviewer was speaking nonsense. I mean, Obama is a narcissist who lives in a self-absorbed world. The difference between Obama and Trump is that, you know, when Trump doesn't like something, he'll go and tweet about it like in the middle of the night. He'll go and tweet about it like 5 a.m. or 2 a.m. or whatever. And I have this funny image of Trump in his pajamas tweeting. But when Obama doesn't like something, Obama will smile in front of the cameras, but he'll then, you know, do something malicious behind the scenes. For instance, after Obama campaigned for Hillary Clinton, Obama wanted Hillary to win, Obama saw Hillary Clinton election victory as a continuation of his legacy, and this man puts his legacy before his country. is a narcissist. His loyalty is ultimately with the Arab Muslim world. It's with America's enemies, specifically if they're Arab Muslim, and specifically if they're Islamists. And so Obama campaigned for Hillary Clinton. He saw Hillary Clinton's election victory as a continuation of his legacy. Donald Trump's election victory, you know, is what stopped the continuation of Obama's legacy. Obama couldn't be like those SAWs going in the streets rioting. He couldn't be one of those triggered snowflakes rioting or being like the, you know, that idiot who basically got on his knees or her knees or whatever and yelled, "No! No! No." No. And that's a hilarious video. It's like right when you see Trump, it's announced that Trump is president, that idiot yells, "No!" I mean, so these, you know, so Obama couldn't be like those SJWs, you know, who riot in the streets like the pieces of shit that they are, pardon my language. No. But that Obama decided to, you know, to, he pretended that he'd accepted a Trump's election victory and would have a smooth transition. But Obama really was setting the course for a rough transition. Because, and let me give you an example. A perfect example is Obama's refusal to veto that evil resolution of the UN against Israel. That evil resolution of the UN, which condemned Israeli settlements, you know, Jews living in their historic homeland beyond a quote-unquote green line, including even in the eastern half of their capital. And let's be clear, there is no difference between Western Jerusalem and Eastern Jerusalem. Eastern Jerusalem is nothing more than the eastern half of Israel's capital, and Western Jerusalem is nothing more than the western half of Israel's capital, and Northern Jerusalem is nothing more than the northern part of Israel's capital, and Southern Jerusalem is nothing more than the southern part of Israel's capital, and Central Jerusalem is nothing more than the central part of Israel's capital. In other words, all of Jerusalem is Israel's capital, period, end of story. But basically, that evil anti-Semitic resolution in the UN, which was passed right around the time of, which was passed during Hanukkah, basically blames the Arab-Israeli conflict not on Arab-Muslim refusal to recognize Israel's right to exist, but on Jews living in the eastern half of their capital and in Yehuda Beshomron, the so-called West Bank. Now also that anti-Semitic resolution made only a reference to like Arab terrorism when making a moral equivalence between Arab terrorism and Israel self-defense, and it basically I think just made a reference to the cycle of violence. But the conflict, but the conflict was blamed, the that evil resolution blamed the conflict not on Arab terrorism, not on Muslim terrorism, not on every Muslim refusing to recognize Israel's right to exist, but on Jews living in Deir ez-Zor Komam beyond the quote-unquote ninth green line. Now, let me just say this. Between the 1948 war and the 1967 war, when there was no Jew living in the territories or the eastern half of Jerusalem, there was still a conflict between Israel and the Arabs. I mean, well, Israel already out of Gaza and since 2005, and there's not a single Jew in Gaza right now. But also between the 1948 war and the 1967 war, when there was no Jew living in Gaza, the so-called West Bank, or at least in Jerusalem, when the eastern half of Jerusalem and the West Bank were under Jordanian rule, Gaza was under Egyptian rule, and there was no Jew living in any of those territories during that time, there was still a conflict between Israel and the Arabs. Why was that? Still trying to destroy Israel. There was still Arab terrorism against Israel because they were trying to destroy Israel. And yet Obama abstained. Obama did not veto that resolution, and he abstained. The reason why was because Obama behaved like, you know, that kid, that bratty kid who, after losing a game, throws all the pieces all over the floor and makes life more difficult for those who want to, you know, clean up, who want to put the game away and clean up and stuff like that. Obama was doing that to Netanyahu, to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Donald Trump. Bottom line, Obama was doing that same thing. Obama bringing that resolution forth because, I mean, it was Donald Trump who tried to stop the resolution from coming forth, and it was Obama. I think Donald Trump got Egypt to not sponsor the resolution, and Obama got, I think it was New Zealand and one other country, the name of my head, to sponsor that resolution. And so Obama helped bring that resolution forth and did not veto that resolution. And, you know, and you can say, well, Obama didn't vote for the resolution, Obama abstained. But everybody knows, Obama knew, and everybody knew that the U.S. abstaining is, and the U.S. voting for it is, in effect, the same thing. That anti-Semitic resolution passes anyway, period. And that disgraceful piece of shit, Obama, that disgraceful traitor who hates this country and whose loyalty is with America's enemies. Obama allowed that evil, despicable, anti-Semitic, shitty thing, pardon my language, in the UN and did not veto it. And the reason why Obama did not veto that resolution was because he wanted to make life more difficult for Trump and for Netanyahu. It was to throw a disarray at Israel and at Donald Trump. But to make life more difficult for Israel and for Donald Trump. And Obama figured by not vetoing a resolution, he was killing two birds with one stone. I mean, not vetoing that resolution. Not vetoing that resolution was an example of not vetoing that resolution was an example of Obama's pettiness. As an example of, you know, Obama's not the guy who would he wouldn't go on Twitter and complain, you know, my legacy was shot down by Trump's election victory. But that's how he felt, and that's largely what inspired him to, you know, to let that resolution go forward, because he knew it would make life more difficult for Israel and for Trump. And Obama figured by bringing that resolution forth and abstaining, he could, by not vetoing, Obama would kill two birds with one stone by making things more difficult for Israel and for the upcoming and for then and for back then the upcoming President Donald Trump. And that's why Obama did not veto that resolution. And Obama, of course, decided to abstain in order to do that little thing of saying, you know, see, I didn't vote for it, I abstained. But you know, but it's virtually voting for and abstaining. The US when there's an anti-Semitic resolution, the UN condemning Israel, the US which has veto power, abstaining or voting against it, it has the same effect. That resolution passing, because there's a lot of anti-Semitism in the UN, a lot of anti-Semitism in the UN, and Obama knew that, and everybody knows that. And so, Obama abstaining and voting for it makes no difference, especially since Obama helped bring that resolution before the UN in the first place. Now, another thing Obama did to try to make life things more difficult for Trump was having his new sanctions against Russia. The sanctions against Russia were not meant to punish Russia. It was meant to punish Donald Trump for stopping Obama's legacy by winning. You know, I sometimes watch these news clips with, you know, I think it was a debate. I think it was a segment with on the Don Imus show. Don Imus is a far leftist host of CNN. And, you know, there was Alan Dershowitz, Dennis Prager, and that whiny baby, Peter Beinart. And, you know, when I watch these segments with Peter Beinart, Peter Beinart sounds like he sounds like a 2-year-old. I mean, the way he talks, he sounds like a whiny 2-year-old. It's like, Israel, the passing of Palestinians. You know, like Peter Beinart's columns, he wrote a column, you know, like saying we shouldn't give Trump the respect we give all of the presidents and saying that Trump wants to take away people's freedoms. And yet, you know, in one segment when Alan Dershowitz, who was rightly pointing out that Obama seems more concerned with his legacy than with America and stuff like that, by, you know, not vetoing his resolution, he seemed more concerned with his legacy than with America or with his ally Israel or with peace or something like that. When Alan Dershowitz, you know, made that factual point that Obama is more con- that, that Obama the president was more concerned with his legacy, Peter Bannon said, "Don't say that about the president. Don't say that about the president." You know, Peter Bannon, you know, was a being a whiny baby. You know, he went after Dershowitz for basically saying the truth that Obama was more concerned with his legacy than he was with the for America or for Israel or for America's ally or for the interest of Middle East peace. And Peter Bannon said, "Don't say that about the president." And yet Peter Bannon is now going around. He's among those who says we shouldn't give Trump the respect. So when he criticized Obama, it's like, oh, when he was president, oh, how dare you say that about the president. But now, you know, when it comes to Donald Trump, you see the left is acting all vicious and stuff like that. You know, complete and utter hypocrites. Complete and utter hypocrites. You see, this is why sensible people are leaving the left. Even people who are more liberal-minded, who are on the left of the political spectrum, are now more alienated by the left, because the left is composed of, right now, not just, it's becoming more extreme, not just Marxists, but Marxists with, like, mental problems, with OCD, mental problems, Marxists who whine. You know, and Peter Beinart sounds like a baby every time he's on the show. Sounds like a baby. I can imagine with a pacifier, Peter Beinart's a baby. He's a whiny baby. And to say that Donald Trump wants to take away our basic freedoms, it's like, you know, I'll agree that Donald Trump is not the most classy guy in the world, but he's not going to impose a fascist dictatorship, and he's not a threat to basic freedoms. Obama, I think, was more of a threat to basic freedoms. For instance, you know, like Obama was going after, I think, North Carolina. They wanted, because North Carolina did not want to force businesses to allow in men who identify as women, because North Carolina did not want to force businesses to allow men who identify as women into the women's bathroom. And Obama was having, I think, a lawsuit against North Carolina, and Trump said, you know, leave this up to the states. So Obama was a bigger threat to individual freedom than Trump was. Obama behaved, if anyone was behaving more of a dictator, was Obama behaving more like a dictator than Trump. I mean, again, Trump is not out to take away minority rights. Trump is not going to impose a fascist dictatorship, so just relax. I agree he's not the most classy guy in the world, but he's not someone who hates immigrants, not someone who hates minorities, not someone who hates people of color, not someone who's going to impose a dictatorship. So just as I said, take a deep and relax. You triggered snowflakes. You triggered poor little snowflakes. Take a breath and relax. People on the right like me were not happy for these 8 years, for these catastrophic 8 years under that disgraceful, traitorous, narcissist Obama. And, you know, so live with it. You may not like Trump, but he's president. Live with it. I mean, so yeah. I said, you know, I mean, so yeah. Live with it. Just relax and live with it. Anyway, what else do I want to talk about for the last 2 minutes? I talk about politics, which is always serious, and this show has gone talked about a specific, very serious topic. So, yeah. Also, on the issue of James Comey, I think I ran a Front Page Magazine article as well that there's some, I think, politicians who, in commercial breaks, they would express concern about Comey's involvement in politics, in politics, you know, in the in the it you know getting more nosy in politics and stuff like that, you know, him using more power in the political sphere. And so, so there you go. So, but again, I think this idea of I think this idea I have like 90 seconds. So what I want to talk about again, I think this idea of Trump being Putin's agent is fake news. It's, I mean, there's no question that Trump wants to cooperate with Putin on some global issues, particularly when it comes to fighting radical Islamic terrorism and fighting ISIS in particular. And as for the whole Putin the killer thing, bear in mind, the less precious President Obama gave billions of dollars over to Iran. Over to the Iranian regime, a major, which is one of the biggest sponsors of terrorism, the Iranian regime, which stones women and murders homosexuals. You know, the Iranian regime, where, like, if women were sentenced to death and they were found to be virgins, you know, the Iranian regime's thugs, the Iranian regime would solve that by having a thug, you know, marry, quote unquote, marry off those women, rape them, and then execute them afterwards. The Iranian regime is a barbaric regime, and Obama gave that evil regime billions of dollars as part of this horrible deal. And also, you know, we cooperated with the U.S. and Stalin were on the same side against Hitler, and Stalin killed more people than Hitler. Nevertheless, it was just a fight to cooperate with Stalin against Hitler. And, you know, with Putin, we're the bad guy, but, you know, I mean, if Trump can get Russia to stop sending nuclear fuel to Iran, I would consider that to be a great thing. Because Iran's a lot of it depends upon Russia for nuclear fuel, and if Russia stops doing that, if there's a war between Iran and Russia, that would be an accomplishment. I would consider that to be a good thing because I see Iran as a threat. Anyway, the show is over, so God bless Israel, God bless America, God bless the free world, and take care.